With the election right around the corner and our ever-expanding network of podcasts, including our most recent edition, Scylla Consciousness, there's never been a better time to become a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, and enhanced show notes for select shows. Our goal is to make the DSR Network membership accessible to everyone, so for the month of May, enjoy 60% off the normal monthly or annual price for the first month or first year. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code MAYDAY, one word, at checkout. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code MAYDAY. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to DSR's Daily, where we look at the world and try to figure out what it all means. One of these days we'll get that right. I'm David Roskopf. I'm joined by Chris Cotmore. How you doing, Chris?
Doing well, thanks.
And the one and only Riley Fessler. How are you doing today, Riley?
Pretty good.
Excellent. And let's start today with Chris. What do you have?
Last week, the United States temporarily halted a weapons shipment to Israel amid concerns about a potential major ground operation in Rafah due to unresolved humanitarian issues, according to a senior administration official. This paused shipment included a significant number of bombs intended for potential use in densely populated areas of Gaza, where intense Israeli bombardments have occurred, especially around Rafah, a crucial point for aid entry and civilian evacuation since the war with Hamas began last October. The halt reflects ongoing U.S. consultations with Israel on the conduct of operations in Gaza and the humanitarian implications of military actions. My question here is the news that we halted the shipment news, or is the news that we are still supplying them with arms news?
Oh, well, no, it's certainly the halt at the shipment. The U.S., in response to the stories on this breaking, have noted that there are a lot of other shipments on their way. What made this shipment different, distinct, and worth holding up was that it contained a lot of very large explosives, like 2,000-pound bombs, which create widespread destruction and are the kinds of things that are likely to produce collateral damage in the way of civilian casualties. So it sends a message. It's the kind of thing that the United States very likely could have done earlier to capture the attention of the Israelis and to try to influence their behavior. The kind of thing the U.S. should have done, given the consequences of the Israeli onslaught so far. It's made the Israelis really unhappy, but it's got their attention. And it's one of the reasons people think that the current incursion into Rafah will be a very limited effort designed to capture this crossing that you mentioned, at which point the Israelis will turn it off, will turn it over perhaps to a third party in order to ensure that arms shipments do not come across it or that Hamas operatives do not use it to escape. And at that point, perhaps the ceasefire will have a chance. The discussions for the ceasefire are continuing. Right now in Washington, everyone is hoping against hope that this scenario plays out. If it doesn't, I don't know that there is a good plan B that brings you a resolution of this conflict any sooner. Riley?
The Biden administration is considering implementing new regulations to restrict the export of advanced proprietary AI models to prevent their misuse, such as in cyber attacks or the creation of biological weapons. These models, which are not currently subject to U.S. government oversight, include those developed by major tech firms like Microsoft, Google, and others. The Commerce Department may utilize a computing power threshold as kind of one of the main metrics for this, which was outlined in a recent executive order to determine which AI models would be subject to export restrictions. The move is part of broader efforts to impede China's progress in AI technologies, which also includes measures to limit the exports of sophisticated AI chips.
On this point, I would direct you all to go back and listen to the most recent episode of our Scylla Consciousness podcast on AI, where we had the head of Washington's leading science and tech think tank, and we talked specifically about whether efforts like this were going to work. Such efforts have to be seen as speed bumps for the Chinese. They're not going to stop them from getting this kind of technology. They're not going to stop them from developing them on their own and using other sources in order to get this technology. It's just going to slow them down. The question is whether in so doing, it actually creates an incentive for them to develop a separate capability, one that we have less influence over. So there's considerable amount of a debate about the effectiveness of these approaches, but the U.S. continues to have as a centerpiece of its China strategy a desire to slow China's adoption of these advanced technologies. Personally, I agree with the assessment that this is not likely to be highly successful. Chris?
The conflict in Myanmar has escalated significantly since the military coup in February 2021, leading to over 3 million people being internally displaced, a 50% increase in the past 6 months alone, as reported by the United Nations. This marks a dire milestone in the country's deepening humanitarian crisis. The majority of those displaced are fleeing conflict areas, particularly in the northwestern regions and the southeast, with significant numbers also affected in the western state of Rakhine, where previous military crackdowns had already caused massive refugee flows into Bangladesh. The UN notes that 18.6 million people now require humanitarian assistance, an increase of 1 million from the previous year, but efforts to aid them are severely constrained by underfunding, receiving less than 5% of the required funds. The situation is exacerbated by the military's continued aggression, including air attacks on civilians and blocking of aid, despite international peace initiatives.
This is a horrible situation. It's been going on for a long time, but I think for our listeners, one of the most important things to do is to recognize that this is another example of tribalism manifesting itself, another example of anti-Islamic, anti-Muslim feeling around the world. The Rohingya people in Myanmar are Muslim, and they are targets of discrimination in that country, which is why they sometimes cross the border into Muslim Bangladesh. But as we've seen and talked about here, the Hindu-Muslim tensions in India, the tensions between Muslims and Christians in Europe and the United States are fault lines in our world right now. These are issues we're going to have to figure out how to deal with more constructively if we want to have a more peaceful world. Unfortunately, that does not look like a near-term prospect. Riley?
Ukraine's security services have said they've thwarted a Russian-orchestrated assassination plot against President Volodymyr Zelensky and other key figures, as stated in a release by the SBU. The plot also targeted the heads of Ukraine's military intelligence and domestic intelligence agencies alongside the president. Two Ukrainian colonels previously recruited by Russia's FSB were arrested for treason as they were integral to the operation, which planned to take the officials hostage and kill them. This incident is part of a broader pattern of reported attempts on Ukrainian leadership, with past assassination plans also involving elaborate tactics like rocket and drone strikes. The authenticity of these claims remains unverified, and Russia has yet to respond to these specific allegations.
Not that we would expect Russia to respond in a truthful way to these allegations, and it is known that the Russians have targeted Zelensky since the beginning of this war. It's a good thing that this plot was uncovered, but it goes high up. It was, you know, deep into his security team, and so it underscores his vulnerability, which could be of real strategic importance if this war continues on a long term basis and these efforts continue. Clearly, I think there's probably some intelligence service cooperation around these issues. And perhaps that's something that we'll hear discussed in an upcoming episode of Above Average Intelligence, our podcast with Mark Polymeropoulos. And I think here with a third story that's right up Chris's alley about big tech, his favorite subject. We go to you and I guess Google antitrust trial.
Oh, I thought I was going to be talking about Apple's insanely fast iPads that nobody needs. But
Well, they did do that unveiling yesterday. And I did note that one of the Apple iPads was designed for use with AI, which I'm not really sure how that's going to work with people's iPads, but I guess their theory is the iPad is just your computer, and you just treat it like you would treat your computer.
You just have to look at your computer or your iPad or your phone. It will do all the work for you. You just have to actually think, and it's just, sending emails, doing all, it's multitasking at its finest.
But we don't need that. We don't need that because we got Riley. He does all that stuff.
We have us. Anyway, we finally return to the Google antitrust case. The United States Department of Justice concluded its closing arguments against Google in a landmark antitrust lawsuit focusing on Google's dominance in the search engine market. The DOJ accused Google of monopolizing the search market, where it allegedly holds about 89% share, significantly higher than competitors like Microsoft's Bing and DuckDuckGo. Google's tactics include exclusive agreements with companies like Apple, which not only maintain its default status on Safari, but also restrict competition by sharing a substantial portion of its ad revenue. The case is reminiscent of a 1998 U.S. versus Microsoft lawsuit, highlighting the intensified scrutiny on big tech's competitive practices by regulators. That 1998 case is funny to think about now because it was Microsoft versus the Department of Justice, and the contention was that Microsoft did not allow original equipment manufacturers like the Dells of the world, I think Dell is still around, maybe not, to not uninstall Microsoft Explorer. Microsoft Explorer is pretty much dead at this point, with Bing replacing it, and that, you know, the fact that they were the dominant search engine is kind of funny now that we think about Google and their dominance.
Riley, I don't know if we should be worried about Chris here. If he finds, you know, these stories to be like sources of humor, like, Microsoft Explorer, I think he's losing it. Of course, you know, everybody else was looking at different trials yesterday. Chris, I just want you to, you know, remember that we did have Stormy Daniels on the stand in the Trump election interference trial, you know, part A. And there was some pretty salacious testimony there, which some people suggest maybe there was too much and that is prejudicial. This was the Trump position. But other analysts said that it provided the kind of insight into the story that Trump was trying to cover up, which is core to the whole meaning and understanding of the crimes that are being addressed here. But I think even more significant was the fact that yesterday, Judge Eileen Cannon the federal judge in Florida who's overseeing the national security documents theft trial of Donald Trump, essentially said, yeah, I don't know when this trial is going to take place. We're indefinitely delayed. There are just so many sub-motions and motions that we've got to hear here. It's going to take a while. Of course, it wouldn't take a normal judge a long time. A lot of these motions are absolutely frivolous. Delay, delay, delay is the Trump tactic, and Trump's best and most dependable lawyer is Judge Eileen Cannon. So these are significant and led to a flurry of social media saying, well, you can't count on the Justice Department to bail out America with Donald Trump. You're going to have to beat him at the ballot box. There was one other small story on the ballot box yesterday, and that is that in the Indiana primary, Nikki Haley had her best showing in months vis-a-vis Trump, getting a big chunk of the vote, over 20% of the vote. And that's significant because Nikki Haley's not running. And if I were Trump, I would see that as worrisome. In any event, it's the middle of the week, so we've got our usual Mothership podcast today. We've got Daily Blast podcast coming. We've got later podcasts coming this week on subjects ranging from all these trials to defense technologies that you really need to pay attention to. So we hope you'll be with us for all those things here at the DSR Network. Until then, thank you, Chris. Thank you, Riley. Thanks to everybody for listening. And we'll be back again with the Daily tomorrow.